Jerry Beto Show. Before we move on, talking about how the New York City Council does not want Walmart to give charitably to New York City. It's just a ploy to try to get stores in the city. Terry writes, how evil do you have to be to try to stop a company from giving food to the poor? Their intent is to control the poor and not let Walmart help. A friend who's familiar with New York City writes this. It's even a little worse than that. There are tens of thousands in NYC that don't live near a grocery store. They pay huge markups for food at corner stores and elsewhere. Imagine how much the working poor could save if a superstore came into their neighborhood in food, diapers, formula alone. It is unconscionable. Hang on, I gotta scroll down as I am here. It is unconscionable to keep a low-cost retailer out of those neighborhoods. It is. Same thing in Green Bay, by the way. I said the hate page, and that's what it is. It's a hate page on Facebook. They don't have the particular story about New York posted, but they do have this. This is Rob Walton. He's the chairman of Walmart, the world's wealthiest corporation. He's the 11th richest man on the planet. His family runs a charity called the Walton Family Foundation. In the last 23 years, he hasn't given a single penny to the charity. Instead, he's used it to avoid an estimated $3 billion in estate taxes. That's not even how charitable deductions work. That's real money. That money the Walton Family Foundation gives away is real money. People don't even, liberals don't even understand, you don't avoid taxes by charitable giving. You aren't taxed on the money that you give. I mean, you avoid taxes only the amount that you otherwise would have been paid, that you would have paid. For example, if I give $100,000 to a charity, means I found a new job. If I give $100,000 to a charity, the tax break is the taxes that I would have paid on the $100,000. Liberals seem to believe that you get all the money back. You don't. They, honest to God, don't understand how that works. All right, this week is the 25th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. Now, in Hong Kong, there have been protests and candlelight vigils and that sort of thing. In China, the government has done everything it could to make sure that people aren't even aware of the anniversary. Do you know that in China, people not old enough to remember the Tiananmen Square massacre, the tank man, the man standing up to the tanks after many people were massacred in a government clampdown on the anti-communist protests? It's not taught in schools, and China even tries to block search engines in the country from allowing people to get any information on it. Still, there are those who remember it, and dissidents were rounded up to make sure they wouldn't cause any trouble on the anniversary. Dan Henninger, writing on his Wonderland piece in today's Wall Street Journal, ties in the anniversary of Tiananmen Square, Bo Bergdahl, and President Obama in general. By the way, this is also the 10th anniversary of the death of President Reagan. Tomorrow, of course, is the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. 70 years of freedom because of the sacrifices made by American soldiers. He ties all of this together. Bergdahl, Obama, and the Tank Man. Barack Obama will be remembered as a president who walked in his own spotlight. Whatever else, he's been on view all the time. This week, it's the Barack Obama-Bo Bergdahl deal. Why did Obama do it? Let us count the conjectures overflowing the World Wide Web. One, because he felt Bo was in failing health. No, because he wants to close Gitmo. No, and sign me onto this one, he writes, because he wants to do a peace negotiation with the Taliban, just as he's doing a peace deal with Iran's mullahs, just as he's doing a peace deal with the new PLO-Hamas unity government. With the Obama presidency, nothing's ever close to done, Benghazi sits as one of life's mysteries. We don't know what was going on with the IRS audits. Obamacare may be a real law, but it has more potholes in the streets of New York. It is too bad Barack Obama can't meet the tank man of Tiananmen Square. He would learn that sometimes, in the affairs of the world, there comes a time to say, enough. Stop. This Thursday is the 25th anniversary, today, of the tank man's solitary protest on June 5th, 1989, the morning after the Chinese army crushed the Students' Democracy Rebellion in Tiananmen Square with hundreds dead. A man in a white shirt walked in front of the army's tanks, driving down a street near the square. For a while, he made the tanks stop. To this day, no one knows who the brave tank man was, but the whole world watched on global television as he stood down the tank commander. When the tanks tried to go around him, he moved in front of them. Eventually, two people came from the crowd and led him away. He was never seen again. There are two other anniversaries this week, and both evoke the same idea of taking an unmistakable political stand. Friday is the 70th anniversary of D-Day, when 160,000 Allied troops landed on the beaches of Normandy. A year later, the U.S.-led allies made the Nazi army stop. Thursday is also the 10th anniversary of Ronald Reagan's death. By gosh, it's been 10 years. It was Reagan's decision early in his presidency to make the Cold War stop by winning it. In November 1989, the Berlin Wall fell. Last week at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, President Obama gave a speech describing his view of the U.S. role in the world. Any close reading of this speech would fail to identify a situation, as we say today, about places such as Ukraine, that would cause Mr. Obama to say simply, "This must be stopped." The president and his supporters would argue, as he has, that the world today is different than the one that existed in 1944 and 1989. An alternative exists, Mr. Obama said at West Point, other than endless war and militarism or doing nothing. We straw men whom Mr. Obama set up and knocked down repeatedly in his military academy apologia would note that in the past 5 years, the space between all or nothing has filled the Russia's border bursting, Iran's nuclear bomb project, Syria's sarin gas, China's disruption of its neighbors, North Korea's threats against South Korea and Japan, Venezuela's Tiananmen-like crackdown of its democracy protesters, and Al-Qaeda subdividing into multiple cells from Asia to Africa. In keeping with the postmodern idea that nothing is ever settled, the Obama foreign policy shop would reply that their middle way of sticking a thumb, or the UN's thumbs, into the world's bursting dams fits the current American mood of post-Iraq and Afghanistan fatigue. Past some point, those fatigue metrics reflect a discounting of American leadership going forward, not what happened 10 years ago. All of this, however, ducks the one big question asked of any modern president's foreign policy. What exactly do you guys stand for? What, when you've left the building, will the United States represent? After more than 5 years of Obama foreign policy, what we've got is a huge fuzzball of good intentions. It doesn't stand for anything. Not a strategy, not a set of identifiable ideas, no real doctrine, and not much to show for whatever it is. Barack Obama in the world resembles Casper the Friendly Ghost, with the U.S. role fading in and out of what view as fading in and out of. Let me try that again. Barack Obama in the world resembles Casper the Friendly Ghost, with the U.S. role fading in and out of view as is his wont. Hillary Clinton flew a million miles as Secretary of State with no evident concept of what she was doing or why. John Kerry endlessly slips in and out of capitals talking. This, they say, is smart power. Smart power just sprung a volunteer POW named Sergeant Bo Bergdahl for 5 stone killer Taliban. No one in the Obama White House, including, as always, Susan Rice, can give an adequate explanation for what this was all about. Only the president knows. That may work for him, but everyone else in an unsettled world, not so well. He's not the first to say it, but that might be the best that it has ever been said. What does the Obama foreign policy stand for? The only, if I had to answer that question, and I thought about this after reading the piece earlier today, if I had to answer that question, actually, I read it last night. What does the Obama foreign policy stand for? If you had to put it in one sentence, under President Obama, what is the mission statement of the United States foreign policy? That's not bad. Jason took a shot. I would shorten it, but here's this. I think you'll agree that this is what you just said, Jason. Make sure we don't piss off other countries. Allies, mostly. But yeah, even enemies. Don't make anyone feel bad. I would have put it another way, but Jason's got it pretty close. We're not in charge. The foreign policy, right now, the foreign policy of the United States of America is we're not in charge. And by not in charge, we are no longer leader of the free world. You don't have to stand for anything when you're not the leader. That's why that this is kind of chicken and egg. We're not the leader because we don't stand for anything. We don't stand for anything because we're not the leader. We have chosen not to lead. You don't have to take a stand. You don't have to have a belief system when you're not in charge. We are not in charge of global freedom anymore. His analogy of the guy standing up to the tank, his analogy of D-Day, which we will talk about in detail tomorrow, that is taking a stand. But you have to be in charge, or at least willing to take a chance to do that. 10:58, 8 minutes to the Rush Limbaugh Show. Have a lovely one, won't you?
Join the Jerry Bader Facebook fan page. Go to jerrybadershow.com.